This podcast is brought to you by Learn Prime. Hone your development skills at learn.thoughtbot.com.
I can visually see your waveforms. It's early, okay? I got up at 6:30 today. Did you guys know that there's a 6:30 in the morning?
Just in general? Yeah.
I thought that was a one time a day thing. Hey, everybody. This is Mark in San Francisco.
And this is Gordon in Boston.
And this is Build Phase.
Yeah, I haven't been to the gym. I normally go to the gym at 7:30 in the morning. So I'm up at 5:30 and on the bus at 6:30, in the gym at 7. But, like, I just have, like, I did a bunch of traveling, conferences, like, WWDC, and then spent another week in San Francisco, and then, like, a family reunion thing in Louisiana and all this other stuff. And I just have not been able to wake up since then. Like, it absolutely killed my sleep schedule. I was in this really good rhythm of like 3-4 times a week, making it in the mornings, but garbage now. Sucks.
Mm-hmm. I don't have an excuse like that. I wish I did.
No, it's just really, it's hard. It's so hard getting back into a schedule like that. You know what I mean? Like, now I'm trying to get into the gym in like the afternoons, but that sucks. Like, I hate going in the afternoons because, like, I got to duck out of work at some point, which means I have to like have a hard out because I have to make appointments at my gym. So I have to be like, oh, I have to leave at 5:00, and then like 4:00 rolls around and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if I can just like shut everything down and walk out at 5, you know, the worst.
Yeah. It sucks not finishing things at the end of the day.
Yeah, I don't want it sitting there. You know, I have such an obsessive personality about this kind of stuff. Like, I will sit there for the rest of the day and, like, stay awake at night thinking about this crap that I didn't get done because I had to be gone at 5:00. Like, I just need to let things finish when they finish, you know? Annoying. Mm-hmm.
Did you stay up for the whole derby last night?
Yeah.
You made it all the way to the end.
Yeah. It ended before midnight my time, 11:30. It wasn't that bad.
It was longer than I thought it was going to be. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to breeze right through it. 7 outs this time around.
Yeah, it's a good thing they didn't go with 10 outs. Just because, like, I mean, there was like two dudes that were actually hitting home runs all night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they took up so much time, those guys.
Yeah, restructuring so it was, you know, AL versus NL was probably not super great.
No, because you mean because NL got crushed?
Yeah, it was just sad. Yeah. Just really sad.
Sad as an NL fan, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I thought it was great.
Whatever. Nobody likes the A's.
No, nobody likes the A's, but...
But that's Cespedes. Very talented.
Yeah, very.
Much muscle. So barrel.
Oh, man. I've been up in New Hampshire in the White Mountains for 4 days. It's pretty great.
What do you do up there?
We hiked. We did some bike riding. That's about it. We didn't do that much. Just hung out. It's cool though.
So do you like stay in a cabin out there? Or?
No, we stayed at like this inn that we got a deal on because we're the only people there. You know, I don't think most people just go on like a random weekend in July after the 4th. You know what I mean? It's like this kind of random weekend to go up there. And we were up there for 3 nights, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. So by Monday morning, like, we had breakfast there on Monday morning, and we were literally, I think, the only people. They had like 12, 15 rooms or something like that. And we were the only people there. It reminded me a lot of, you ever see Fawlty Towers?
No.
You never seen Fawlty Towers?
Dude, no.
You got to get on that. It's so good. I grew
what
up on the show. It's like this British sitcom with John Cleese, where he runs a motel called Fawlty Towers, or like a bed and breakfast thing. And it's just hilarious. There were only like, I don't know, 10, 12 episodes or something like that. Like, it's an incredibly short running show, but it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life. It's so good. And it's all on Netflix. So, you know,
It looks like there were two seasons or series, right, as they call them over there. One in 75.
Yeah.
And then the second one was in 79.
Right.
They're just like 4 years later. You're like, you know what I miss?
Right.
Fawlty Towers. Right. Let's bring this back for four episodes.
Right. British people, man.
That's not true. That's not true. I lied. There were six episodes.
Yeah.
Series two.
Oh, it's such a good show. You got to watch it. It's another one of those shows that I've just seen like every episode three or four times. I grew up with that show. John Cleese is phenomenal in it. But this place reminded me a lot of that. Like, we walked in and it was just kind of like a weird innkeeper and... You know, and it was like super empty, and Fawlty Towers is always super empty, you know what I mean? They always have like two people for dinner, and so it's like felt like that, you know. Nice people, like, you know, but oh man. So do you want to talk about this binding thing?
Yeah, please.
Do you want to give an overview of where we are with it right now and where we're trying to go with it?
Yeah, so in a few places we have forms and model objects, and we don't want a bunch of code sitting around in the view controllers to bind, you know, form fields to key paths on model objects. So you wrote this text field form binding thing that gets initialized with a text field and a model object and a key path and an optional value transformer, and it adds itself as the target for when editing changes or when editing ends, and then it just updates the value on the model object optionally by transforming it. And now I need to bind it to a text view.
Instead of a text field, yeah.
Right. And it requires a little reworking because UI text view doesn't descend from UI control, so there's no target action. So we have to observe changes in a different way. But there's still going to be a lot of duplicated code. Mm-hmm. So trying to figure out what are the, you know, what parts of your text field binding are concrete, what parts are abstract, what can be extracted out, mm-hmm, into something common to both of them.
We talked about this basic structure a long time ago on a different episode, because I basically used this in a different project. I like this one better for some reason. I'm not sure if it feels cleaner, or probably, honestly, when I did this last time, there were just more things that I needed to do. You know, there were like all these different date fields and all this crap. So I had to deal with messing with the input view and a whole bunch of other things. And so this feels cleaner, probably because I'm not doing as much with it. We'll put all this up, by the way. Like, we'll put code samples from all this stuff up into the GitHub repo, the build phase GitHub repo. We'll link to that from here. But so the thing I did last time was I used subclasses. And I'm not sure that that's still the best way to do it, just because I said this recently, but like that I'm shying away from subclasses in general. You know what I mean? Like, if I find myself subclassing something, I'm usually like, oh, well, could I do this as a interface, as a protocol instead? You know?
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to figure out here. I'd rather not create classes for every,
right,
you know, view element that I'd want to bind to.
Right.
So this thing expects a text field and then a model object and a key path.
Mm-hmm.
But that object key path sort of pattern could work on both sides, I think.
Right.
Like init with view, you know, like value key path, model object key path. So if you're binding, you know, a first name string on a user model to a text field, that's easy. Like, it maps right over. You know, you would bind this text field, it's a view, it's text key path. Well, I guess would that even work? No, because the method of being notified when these views change is different all over the place. You know, target action on text fields, you know, for text views, you'd have to use the notification.
Right. Subscribing to the actual notification.
Right. Being notified when the value changes.
UI text view, man. Like, what a pain in the ass this thing is. You know, half this would be solved if it just conformed to UI control, and then we could just change the init method to take a UI control instead of a UI text field.
Yeah, I guess it's because it has to come down from UI scroll view.
Right. Still a pain in the ass.
No, it is. Not to mention buggy on iOS 7.
Yeah.
Ugh. No, not a fan.
So what are the main, the differences are, we need to listen for the actual notification. UI text view did end editing notification, right? Something like that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, and so then the whatever internal method that's used to update the value on the model object is going to be different. What's going to be the same? What did you see that was going to end up being duplicated?
Well, it's that method you just mentioned that actually does the updating on the model object.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's very much just set value for keypath.
But with the transformer stuff?
Yeah. I mean, it optionally runs it through a transformer. If I made this more abstract, I'd probably not use NS value transformers here and just like use a block that give you the chance to define how it maps over. I mean, this class isn't much code. It's 70 lines with the comment. It's right. Just like setting up the observation, you know, having references to everything provided in the initializer, which is the view, the model object, the key path, and the value transformer. In this case, the text field, you add yourself as a target, give it an action, and then in that action, you just update the model object. So there's not a lot to duplicate, but it's stupid to duplicate it.
Is it, though, or is it trying to be too dry?
Possibly.
Theoretically, we could just create another. So this one's called form field binding. We could rename this one to be text field form binding. And we could have another one that's a text view form binding. And they're two different objects. They both inherit from NS object. They both have roughly the same interface. But like you said, the most of... We have to duplicate... tests would feel similar, is the only thing I can think of. You know, the tests for the binding would feel very, very similar to the text field form binding.
Like really the only concrete concept here is how you get notified of value changes in that particular view. And in most cases, you know, target action will work for everything that can possibly be like form input, you know, steppers, segmented controls, switches, text fields. They all have target action. They're all controls. Text view is really the only one that's an outlier. So maybe in this case, it does warrant its own...
concrete class.
Yeah.
I just think that like if we move it out into a protocol, the only thing that we'd be able to move out to a protocol is the property definitions. And then UI text field would have to be an ID instead of a text field. So we'd lose type safety there.
What would conform to this protocol?
Both these bindings. So you could have like a text field form binding and a text view form binding that both conform to the form binding protocol that defines just things like, let's see, it would be like an ID property of for form element, an object property called model object, a string property called key path, and a value transformer property called transformer. And then a set default value method. That would be the common interface. But I don't think that that's necessarily worth pulling out. Do you?
No, because now you're just duplicating the storage to like fulfill that protocol.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, why wouldn't you just subclass?
Mm-hmm.
Just have a base class that has this, you know, view, model object, key path, transformer, and then let subclasses specify, you know, you would just override something like value changed. And in value changed, you determine how that new value gets put onto the model object.
But you'd also have to define a method for hooking up the you know, like doing whatever notification registration you need to do.
Subclass initializers.
Oh, yeah. So it would be something like init with form element, model object, key path, value transformer.
And I think you'd only need two subclasses because at that point you just need one for each type of notification system. You have one that works with all UI controls, and then one that works with UI text view, listens for the notification.
How bad would that be? That doesn't seem like it would be that bad.
No, I mean, it's just that you said you were shying away from subclassing. I think this is the perfect case, though, if you're going to subclass.
Because then what you wouldn't have to do... All the like the subclassed init method would be very small. All it would do is basically do the whatever notification it needs to do. And then you'd override dalloc to remove the observers. And then you would override set default value, and that's it. Because I have a so the other piece of this is that there's a set default value method that's public, but not actually you don't end up using it that much publicly. It's used inside the init method, which I was kind of weird about, but it's used inside the init method so that when you say init with form element model object key path value transformer, it then calls set default value. So then it uses KVC in the other direction. It does self.modelObject value for key path, self.keyPath to pull the value out of the model, and then sets itself as a default value so that if there's something existing at that key path for that model, then it automatically gets set as the value of the field.
It's like an editing the object case. Like you pass right. an existing user in and you can fill out all the fields.
Right.
And then let them change it and right. commit those changes back.
Right. But it works at like a, I think, a really nice abstracted level where like the binding doesn't care and the form actually doesn't really care if it's editing or creating a new one either, because it just sets up these form bindings. It either passes in an empty object, right? Like I create a user object and hand this user object to these bindings, or I have a user and I just hand that create that existing user to these bindings.
Right. You're just putting them in sync.
Yep.
From the get-go. Yep.
Exactly. I guess that wouldn't be bad. I guess this wouldn't be horrible to have subclassed.
And this, you know, there's nothing about this that's specific to this project even.
No. The only thing is that we're disabling text fields. And that's only in this case. And I think that's going to have to get removed somehow. Because as I was talking, I realized. So in this specific case, if we get the thing that I wrote these for is during the registration process, we can get a user back from the system. And if a user was found in the system, like through this other weird mechanic, right, our backend hits another backend and sees if that is. So if our backend ends up during the registration process pulling a user from this external backend, then we can't edit those properties. So we can't edit stuff like the address, because there's no way for us to propagate those changes back up. So during registration, if we get a user object back from the system and they have like an address and a phone number and an email, basically, we don't want to let the user change those, right? We want to have those. That's just what it is now. So part of this set default value method disables text fields if there was a value provided to them. But that's going to have to change, because once we get to editing a user, that's like, yeah. you won't be able to change anything, you know? So we're going to have to be smarter about that in the future.
Yeah. You almost want the view model in charge of that, saying that this view should be enabled mm-hmm. or not mm-hmm. and not here in the binding.
Yeah. It's just that I put it in the binding just because it was a fast thing to do. And at that point, the only thing that knows about the content of the field and whether or not there is content in the field is the binding. And so it made sense in that sense to put it there. But yeah, I think it's going to have to go in the view model, which kind of sucks because it just means more conditionals.
I had another thought about implementation.
Okay.
If, you know, we made that generic class that took a, you know, a view object and a key path, mm-hmm. and a model object and a key path, mm-hmm. what would you think about a category on UI control that adds a method that's, you know, bind to model object key path with transformer, mm-hmm. and then it passes itself in, and then it's relevant, you know, sort of value UI control. That'd probably have to be on individual view elements. Mm-hmm. Would that make using it any nicer?
I don't know. Cause then it would have to hold on to the binding, right? Something has to hold on to the binding because the binding has to stick around. So right now, in one case, the view controller is just holding on to two bindings, right? Like during sign up or, yeah, during the first part of registration, all we need is a mobile phone number and an email address. So the view controller holds on to an instance of the binding that's literally just like email binding and sets it up as connecting it up to this, creating this binding and hooking up to the text field and passing a key path and all that stuff. Mm. And then in another case, there's like crap load of bindings, and so instead of having a property for each one, I just created an array of form bindings, and it just adds these bindings to the array so that the array is so it's holding on to them through the array.
Right.
So something has to hold on to that because there has to be something to get that callback information for them.
Well, that method could return the binding that it just created back to you, and then you know you're responsible for retaining it. Otherwise, we're in associated objects territory.
Right, which...
Yeah, that feels wrong.
Yeah, I just don't know that it's... I don't know that it's that much better than just doing it directly, you know?
Yeah, it would require so many categories.
It'd require multiple categories, plus you'd have to... Oh, no, I guess... I mean, the control instance would know what kind of binding it needs to create, so you'd at least remove that level of abstraction. You'd at least be able to say... Oh, you know what I think I did last time? I think I did a class cluster.
Explain.
So I think I did a class cluster. I think I had a concrete superclass, but then its init method took a type, enum type. Well, I don't remember, binding type or something. And so then I said, just give me a form binding. Instead of having to manage all these subclasses directly, I had the subclasses, but then I just had like a factory method on the form bindings concrete superclass that said, you know, form binding with type model object key path, I think, something like that. You know what I mean? So it just added one more param to this factory thing, and then the form binding itself would vend the proper subclass.
Right. But the calling code doesn't care about what subclass it is. It only cares about the top-level interface.
Exactly. Exactly. Because that's probably the nicest way to do it, and it means that like I don't have to care about different form-binding subclasses. You know what I mean? Because you don't call these externally. You know, that's the whole point of these, is you set them up, and then they just do their thing. You know, that's the whole point of the binding system. And we're testing that, which is nice.
I think your first instincts there are correct. I think that's right. The only thing I would change is instead of one method that takes a type, which is going to necessitate a switch, I'd probably have like a class method for every like view type. Mm-hmm. Like I want a text field binding.
Mm-hmm.
I want a switch binding.
Yeah, that probably makes the most sense.
Yeah, we should put this code up on the build phase GitHub repo. And then we should try that. I'll see what comes out of it today. The good thing about this show right now is that we're both on the same project.
Yeah.
So we actually have like legitimate things to talk about. Like these are real world problems.
Yeah.
Solving as we go. So yeah, once I do that, then we can throw up a before and after. I'd even be interested in like pull requests from people to see like how would you do this?
Yeah, that'd be cool. The only thing I'd say that you brought up a second ago, and I just want to circle back to it, is using a block instead of a value transformer. The only objection I'd have to that is that by using a value transformer, specific value transformer, we can add tests around that transformation. If we use a block, then we can't test that specific, you know, we can say like, yeah, the value transformer executes the block if it's provided one. That's fine. But what I want is to be able to say like on the form binding side, if it's handed a value transformer, it uses it. And then on the view model side, say that it hands this specific transformer into a view model. You know, it lets us just test that. Ooh, I'm like punching my mic. It lets us test that whole interaction a lot better.
And the transformer itself.
Right, and the transformer itself, which I think I actually... there was something stupid that was just Boolean logic. But it was like a couple levels of Boolean logic. It was like, was it the has content thing that I put on NS string? I don't remember. There was something recently that I was like, initially in my head, I was like, I don't know if this needs tests. And then I just totally screwed up. It was just simple Boolean logic, but there was something about it that, and I think what happened is I ended up refactoring it because the naming was confusing me. You know what I mean? Like it was this flipped naming. So I think it was that I was checking to see if is this string actually an empty string is essentially what it was. Or is it a string that only consists of white space? Mm. We're getting empty strings back from something or some, I don't remember the exact reason that we did it, but there was this Boolean logic and there were two levels of it. So there's Boolean logic inside this string category, but then there's also Boolean logic inside the view model where I was using that string category. And there was something about it that was confusing me. And so like, I was initially like, oh, this, you know, this is stupid Boolean logic. I don't need tests around this. But then I put them in anyway, just because that's what I've been forcing myself to do here, just to try really try to hammer this in. And it totally saved me, because I just completely had it backwards in one spot. It was just a boneheaded, like, you know, because I was using – it was because I was using compare for some reason. I was using NS string compare, and then, like, you know, using the ascending, descending, and which one of those means the right thing. And
so I don't blame you.
Yeah. And it was just kind of like – and then eventually I ended up reading the test and being like, oh, wait a minute. No, that's totally bad. Like, you know, this all this Boolean logic was trickling down from this fact that I just had this base thing wrong, you know, but the test saved me in that, like, I didn't end up with that bonehead, like, oh, I just reversed a Boolean somewhere down the chain. And so this, I want that same thing for simple value transformers. Like, this value transformer that we created here, really all it does is it transforms strings into NS numbers by boxing the integer value of an NS string, you know? That's it. That's all it does. But I 100% want tests around that, because I'm an idiot, and I will screw that up at some point. You know what I mean?
I don't blame you for screwing up compare.
Yeah.
I always have to think way too hard when using compare, especially with, like, dates.
Right.
Oh.
The ones that get me with dates are, like, the date since this date. And I'm like, wait a minute, which direction does that go again? Because it all, like, there's always that second where I go, like, is it dates since, like, backwards? Like, when do I use the negative time interval? When do I use a positive time interval? Like, date since now?
I don't know.
It's just worded weird, you know what I mean? Like, in a way that makes me think too hard.
I also always have a hell of a time remembering the actual method signatures on NSDate. Like, which ones are instance methods? Which ones are class methods? Is it date with time interval since now? Is it time interval since now from date? Like,
right. But that's what dash is for. That's all I just pull up dash.
Right.
Constantly.
I'm too stubborn for that usually. Like, I think I know it, and so I just keep trying, like, first letters and be like, no, that's not right. Back it up.
I'm still using that. See, I have to use dash because I'm still using that fuzzy finder, Xcode fuzzy finder plugin. And basically what it does is it just kind of ruins it helps a lot of times, but it also completely ruins Fuzzy Finder a lot of times. Like, when I'm typing in a method, oh man, it kills me when, just as part of my normal workflow, one thing that I do all the time is type methods that don't exist yet. Right? I call methods that don't exist yet constantly, because I'm testing first, right? So I'm writing the method in the test, and the method doesn't exist, and it's insistent on trying to help me with that. So it doesn't show me what I'm typing. It just shows me what it wants to autocomplete to, and then, like, subtly highlights specific letters inside that autocompletion from gray to white. So I have to be like, it takes me until I finish the method, until I know whether or not I spelled the method the way I wanted to or not. It sucks. I should see if there's an update for that, actually. Probably is.
You know, there's so many common terms we use. It'd be great if it would just kind of, like, if it doesn't exist,
yeah, like, just stop.
Help me finish it.
Yeah.
Am I typing in VAL? Then I want value.
Right.
Well, like, let me tab complete
that. But that's what Xcode tries to do, and that's why we had, what was the, instead of NS string, it would try to do...
NS stream.
Stream, yeah. Like, thanks. But
I think now it tracks usage.
Right, it does.
To prioritize that list. My problem with that fuzzy finder was that it never worked exactly like Xcode 5's open quickly.
Yeah.
So the way that I use Xcode, you know, open quickly is I, like, let's say we have, you know, our prefix and it's create post view controller. Mm-hmm. I'll type in the prefix and the first, or basically each capital letter in the class name.
Yeah.
So it'd be like prefix CPVC, and that'll match, like, create post view controller. The fuzzy finder wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was way too dependent on that. I don't know if they fixed that, but I couldn't get on board.
Yeah. It really helps for, like, UI table view, delegate, and data source methods, where, like, Xcode just straight up won't autocomplete most of those, because once you get to the colon, you know, all of those start with table view. Every single one starts with table view, colon. But once you hit that colon, Xcode's like, cool, you're done, right? Like, that's as far as you needed to go. It's like, no, yeah. That's not the important part of this method signature. The important part of the method signature is everything after that. So instead, I can just do dash space did select, and it'll pop up. You know, the right thing will pop up. And that's, hitting that enough is worth it to me, as opposed to going like table view and then like arrow, and then possibly hitting that like choosing did deselect instead of did select, which happens, you know what I mean? Just like,
That's my most upvoted question on Stack Overflow, by the way, from the year 2009.
Yeah. That's such a stupid, whatever. Is there more to talk about here? We settle on probably doing, you're going to try to do a subclass of this. We'll see how it works out. We'll post it online.
Yeah, I like the class cluster idea. I've had a lot of coffee. I kind of just want to get to it.
Yeah.
Maybe go for a quick run first.
Yeah, sure. Just around the office.
Sure.
Laps around your beanbag chairs.
They're so comfortable.
Show notes for this episode are going to be found at podcasts.thoughtbot.com/buildphase/46.
As always, we'd like to hear from you, so email us at buildphase@thoughtbot.com or reach out on Twitter @buildphase. And as always, we really, really appreciate ratings and reviews on iTunes. Like we really do.
Yeah. Actually, we would really like to be able to beat our other podcast in ratings. So Giant Robots Smashing Into Other Giant Robots, which is kind of like our Ruby-ish interview show. They have 56 ratings right now on iTunes, and they have 1 4-star. Right now, we have 26 of all 5-star. If we can get 57, or even if we can get 56 of all 5-star, it'll give us so many bragging rights, and I will never let Ben Orenstein live it down. So that would be really awesome, just for my self-esteem, honestly.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. All right, I'll talk to you later.
I'm making bogus iTunes accounts, right?
Are you? Yeah. We can get Tony to submit some more reviews. All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, later.